Welcome to the Bioelectronics Podcast by NeuroCore. I'm your host, Rick Rowan, and this is where we can hear about how bioelectronics is changing healthcare and providing benefits to both patients and healthcare systems worldwide.
I suppose, Luigi, my question then is, in terms of measuring those different things, so you know that endogenously the body needs a certain amount of voltage or ampere to elicit certain things and all the rest of it. How do you then go about researching the way that you put electricity to the body to elicit those different responses? You've talked about mechanoreceptors, you've talked about alpha motor neurons. How do you, as from an academic point of view, go about research in this space?
I think as research goes, it's all about, I will review the literature and see what specific parameters have been used, those that actually are particularly effective, and then try to add an extra layer to that, maybe a different combination at the same time. So the body received the two types of stimulation at the same time. So it's all about bringing forward what is already known, a little step. As you know, James, research is all about this. You know, each generation of researchers try to bring a little bit forward what is already known.
Sure.
So it's important to look at what is known, like what it has been done, what it works and what it doesn't, and then try to use that knowledge and try to formulate a new strategy to further enhance the efficacy.
And how do you, this might sound like a really silly question, so apologies, but how do you go about reading research in this area? And the reason I ask that question is because you mentioned there about really paying attention to what settings people have used. Is that the most important thing when you're looking at a study? I mean, how do you go about reading one of these studies and figuring out whether you believe that the power of that study is enough to influence your thinking or something along those lines?
Well, it is important, James, to look at the methodology they used. If there is a double bind, if it's a control, the parameter where you use, the type of population cohort involved. So you have to look at the whole set of the details of the study, and then compare this with the known physiology or known pathology or known medicine, and say, okay, a known let's say research technique, and see, you know, this is a study particularly well done. This one could be a little bit improved, if you see what I mean. I don't like, obviously, criticizing other people's work. Well, we all know that there is always something to be improved. And some studies are better designed than others.
Yeah, I'll probably add to that is aside from the discovery and research discovery, often we are looking for validation as well around pre-existing knowledge. So, often we'll look at a study and we see the parameters used and the objective outcome that they were aiming for. And we're like, well, you know, that's unlikely to work. And often it doesn't, or the opposite. That, you know, should be shown to be efficacious, and it is. And then there's the other times where we are surprised at the outcome that was achieved because that particular parameter or protocol, we hadn't seen in that use, and then that obviously deserves further research and digging deeper on. So it's, as you mentioned earlier, James, it's such a new area, as in, you know, behind biochemistry, that we're literally just scratching the surface. Not necessarily for us, but the industry as a whole, the technology as a whole, which sort of is half the reason it's so exciting.
So you must read a lot of research on this, right? So how do you use the research? What as NeuroCore, what changes the more research you read, if that makes sense?
So the direction or the iteration of particular parameters and protocols for treatments or for the applications of those treatments. For instance, whether or not we find new evidence for pain or new evidence for inflammation reduction or whatever those applications are, going forward, of course, we'll then, you know, with our own studies and, you know, the direction that they're taking is, again, for us, it's not just about validation, because to be honest with you, and I'm not sure, you know, I'm pretty sure Luigi will agree primarily, is that we're no longer interested in just validation, because as far as we're concerned, the validation is not what's needed. It's the overwhelming evidence is that this is a highly useful and efficacious modality and technology. What we are interested in is the optimization of it, because that is by a long way still has it still has a very long way to go. And this is, you know, this is our focus, this is our direction, and not just optimization for the applications, but then how it needs to be or can be optimized for the individual and or the clinical outcome that's needing to be achieved.
Absolutely, I agree with that, Rick. I mean, this is important that we optimize as much as possible. Also, we take into consideration the individual differences. Because during the research, you have a population cohort. And obviously, the way the study are carried out is that you compare, for example, control with experimental. But then if you want to look into the details and you look within the same group, you will see difference in the responses. When I was doing my study, obviously, we always talk between colleagues. You know, what I was saying, improvement, meaning that it is important that as a researcher, you talk to your colleagues, you gauge their view and you give them their view. Research is a teamwork. And obviously, sometimes it's physical, but sometimes it's not physical. You don't interact physically. So there is a group of research that has published something, then you review that thing, and then you try to bring it forward. So as the way I see in the future therapy is to start and personalize it, because yes, there are things that obviously they are effective as a group. You have the experimental group and the control group, but then within the experimental group, you have a different degree of response. And I think in the future will be interesting to see why some individual have got a greater degree of response. What is the physiological background? And then we can then really optimize it at a personal level.
Look, we could probably talk all day about, you know, the various areas, you know, diabetes, sports, professional sports recovery, human performance, post-operative recovery, injury recovery, pain management. We could go on and on. You know, I think maybe something a little bit different, and given the, you know, current global crisis and things like, you know, general health, immune system health, etc. It might be interesting, Luigi, to maybe chat a little bit about the effect that exogenic microcurrent or electrical current can have on mitochondrial health. Do you think that might be interesting?
Yes, so there are different factors that impact negatively on mitochondrial health, and including the free radicals, which they are important at the right level, but excess of them, they actually damage the mitochondria. Now, the free radicals are a product of the actually cellular respiration. So the mitochondria are particularly vulnerable because they are exposed to them, and it has been shown that actually can damage the membrane, the mitochondrial DNA. The mitochondrial DNA, they have got their own DNA, which is transmitted through the mother. So the microcurrent can help to stabilize the membrane. And also it has been shown that increases ATP synthesis and metabolize across the membrane of cells. So I think it's worthwhile investigating further on the effect of microcurrent as a prevention and also as a treatment for mitochondrial dysfunction.
Luigi, you wrote a short article through some research that we did on tennis elbow. So without embarrassing myself and trying to pronounce the scientific term or the clinical term, because I struggle with it.
Lateral epicondylitis.
That's the one. Would you mind expanding a little bit on those findings? Obviously, you know, it was one of the studies that we looked at with regards to specific parameters. There was, because there was some good protocol parameters available for that study that we were able to identify. But would you mind talking us through a little bit of the mechanism and how that, you know, may help? Because, you know, it is quite a common ailment. And interestingly, I had a conversation with an anaesthetist recently, James, who wanted to know why after so many different or so many years and so many different types of treatment, he was actually able to resolve this himself using our consumer product. So it's I think it's quite an interesting subject.
Yeah.
I mean, it was an interesting study because tennis elbow, lateral epicondylitis, is basically an overuse of the extensor muscle of the forearm, particularly at the attachment with the lateral epicondyle. And this will cause pain, and a lot of the debilitation is quite common. And in that study, they utilized microcurrent, and they found that not just improved the pain and inflammation, but also the range of motion. So the physical disability has improved a lot. And obviously, this is make a lot of sense because microcurrent is quite versatile, and it works at cellular level. So basically, what happens is when we deliver a microcurrent, it reestablishes the normal flow of endogenous current, which is extremely important for the repair process. So when we deliver that, at the same time, you know, we'll reduce inflammation. And then we, again, you know, we go to that this important concept that I like. We just provide the body what it needs to heal itself. So the innate ability of the body is enhanced. And we can see in this, you know, particular studies.
It's a good way of phrasing it. I think I understand that a lot more that now, and certainly after speaking to you, Luigi, that is what you're doing. You're providing that energy and as Rick would call it, you know, the key to the lock and in the right formula, in the right, you know, protocol, however you want to call it, then you're doing exactly that. You're just giving the body the best chance of healing itself, which I think is really nice.
Yeah, I mean, I can give an example, which is, I think is very significant. Sometimes people have a go pain, but when you do the, you know, the different examination, you cannot see any alteration in your pathology in the area.
Yeah,
and most of the time it's caused by a scar, because a scar tissue is actually is a sort of a barrier to the flow of endogenous electricity in the terms of microcurrent. And when this flow is disrupted, obviously this affects the physiology, causes pain. Sometimes the pain can radiate in various parts of the body, which they are not directly connected, because this the entire body is actually pervaded by this microcurrent. When you stimulate you with the microcurrent each and every scar, three things can happen. Either the improvement in pain is direct, and sometimes actually for a short period you have an increase in pain because suddenly that area of the body wakes up, and then obviously you treat once again and then improves. So we can see how the endogenous current is fundamentally important to human physiology.
Well, I hope you've enjoyed today's chat and the you know, understanding a bit of this, the science and the application of the science behind it. Thanks, James, for joining us. Thanks, Luigi, for the insight, and I look forward to our next chat. Hi, everyone. Thanks for listening to the Bioelectronics Podcast by NeuroCore and for making it to the end of this episode. If you enjoyed it, remember to subscribe, rate us, and leave a review. We'd much appreciate it. And you can head to the description of this episode to follow us on all of our socials so you don't miss out on any of the latest Phylectronic content.